It's not a happy Bible reading, is it? All right. Doesn't sound all that great. Sounds like doom and gloom. Actually reminds me of Eeyore. You'd all remember Eeyore, would you? One of my favourite characters in Christopher Robin. Eeyore's basically clinically depressed, really. And sometimes I think that as Christians, people see us that way, that we're a bit clinically depressed, that we've got a message of doom and gloom, that we sound a bit like Eeyore. In fact, I've got a clip of Eeyore that we can just play for you now and see how it compares.
Good morning, Pooh Bear.
If it is a good morning, which I doubt.
However, Anna, did I get your tail back on properly, Eeyore?
No matter. Most likely lose it again anyway.
Poor dear. You know, I may have just the thing. Up, up, up you go. There you are.
It's an awful nice tail, Kanga. Much nicer than the rest of me. It's not much of a tail, but I'm sort of attached to it.
Not much of a house. Just right for not much of a donkey.
Might take a day or two, but I'll find a new one.
End of the road. Nothing to do. And no hope of things getting better. Sounds like Saturday night at my house.
Well, there's Eeyore. But the Christian message, we would think, shouldn't be negative. And yet, these are the words of Jesus. These are the words of Jesus to his disciples. Now, the reason it caught my attention, actually, was because of the last verse, where Jesus says, in the midst of all this, he says, stand up. Stand up. And I was particularly thinking about Margaret and her becoming a senior soldier today. Thinking about this idea of standing up for Jesus, of witnessing for Jesus. In fact, I was going to base the sermon, find some, you know, story on witnessing, but I don't know if you know this, but the Greek word for witnessing is martyreo, and it's actually the word for martyr. And to bear witness actually meant to be a martyr, to die for your faith. And that wasn't particularly a happy message either. But we need to pay attention to what Jesus says here. And it is what we would describe as an apocalyptic passage. You know, there's certain passages that we read in the New Testament, a few in the Old, and kind of the whole of the book of Revelation, which are what we call apocalyptic language. But we don't have to look that far in the future to know what Jesus was talking about here. Jesus was actually talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, and it basically happened within a generation. In AD 70, Jerusalem was destroyed. And we, perhaps we don't quite get this, but the Jews felt that they were an occupied country, that they were occupied by a foreign power. So even in Jesus' time, in fact, through the whole of that first century up until AD 70, there'd been freedom fighters who the Romans regarded as terrorists, who'd led insurrections and revolts. And this had become organised until eventually some people laid claim to Jerusalem, and the Romans had had enough. So they sent in the legions and they surrounded Jerusalem for 4 months in a 4 month siege, and then they destroyed it, carried off the people. So that was Jesus' message to a first century church who was facing immediate persecution. But the passage also talks about the second coming of Jesus. You'll see the Son of Man coming. You'll see the Son of Man coming. And what does that mean? What does that mean? How do we make sense of that? Now, Jesus' second coming has been predicted by Christians lots of times since then. And in fact, the very first Christians thought Jesus was coming again very soon. That it's one of the reasons they sold all their possessions and shared everything in common, was they believed that society, as they knew it, would soon disappear with the second coming. And if you read the scriptures and you read the book of Thessalonians, which is a very early letter of Paul, it's actually Paul addressing this conundrum for the church because Christians had started to die. And they died and Jesus hadn't come again. So what was their fate? So it's a challenge for first Christians, and it's one of the reasons that someone like Paul doesn't particularly take on society. It is kind of, his letters are not really about going out and changing the world. It's all about how to live in the church. It's not about going out to change the world because they believed that Jesus was coming again soon. So they didn't take on slavery. They didn't take on, seek any kind of political clout. And so lots of times since the second coming has been predicted. I can remember when I was a kid, well, I was a teenager in the 70s, and there were some movies about the rapture and there was the rise of a particular dispensational theology, which we technically didn't agree with, but we didn't know that. So I remember watching the movie in Albion anyway, about the, you know, the rapture and Larry Norman songs and all kinds of things about this, that the end of the world was coming soon. And it hasn't. Well, we're not the first to do that. So the Second-day Adventists, the Adventist part means the advent of Jesus, the second coming. They came out of a theological movement in the early 1800s who'd actually believed that Jesus would come again in 1844. They had a very precise date. He didn't, as we know. And eventually the Adventists thought that must mean something else, and they formed their denomination about a certain set of beliefs. I think it's kind of awkward for Christians because we keep on predicting the coming of Jesus. And we do need to think about how we will deal with that, because really Jesus, the coming again of Jesus, has been longer than we thought. It's like that, you know, moment in you see in movies where they say, and now here's Johnny. And there's a pause and Johnny doesn't come. And sometimes for Christians it can feel like that. And it's awkward. But the reality is we do live between the times. We live between the birth of the kingdom in Jesus Christ and its final consummation in Jesus Christ. And we live heralding the return of our King. And truth be told, the fanfare has gone on much longer than we anticipated. But we must resist the temptation to relieve the awkwardness by changing our message. We have no authority to do so. It is our King's message, and we are his people. So what are we to do with this message to these first century disciples? And he says, when you see the coming tribulation, when you see these real events in the world, even though they're described in metaphorical language, Jesus says, stand up, lift your heads. Now the truth is, of course, that the world has always been burning, even as it gets better. And that's kind of a difficult thing to wrestle with, but I remember in 1989, there was a song by Billy Joel, who was, some of you may have heard of him, he was a singer. And he had a song that said, we didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. And he just goes on to list off this whole series of events that have been happening. And if you've studied history at any level, you'll know he's been right. So lots of you, like me, were around in the 70s when the thing that we were most scared of was the world running out of petrol and nuclear disaster. So nuclear disaster, that was imminent, and so was the world running out of petrol. In the 50s, it was the Cold War. We were scared about what those communists and the Russians would do. We're still scared about what the Russians and communists would do. But of course, if you go further back, what about the time of the First World War? Not only was there this great war that killed millions of people, but there was a Spanish influenza outbreak that killed around 100 million people around the world. Or for those of you with Irish ancestry, what about the Great Famine, the Great Hunger, as it's sometimes called, when for 3 years in a row in 1845, the potato crop failed and people starved? They're pretty bad disasters too, weren't they? People must have felt like that's the end of the world as they knew it anyway. We can go back further. There was a war in Europe that went for 100 years between the French and the English, from 1337 to 1453. And of course, before that, there was the plague. There was the Dark Ages. There was the sack of Rome by the Goths, the Visigoths in 410. So it's kind of, I think, Billy Joel was right. You know, maybe we haven't paid enough attention to him as a prophet. That he was correct, that we didn't start the fire, it's always been burning. And in fact, a few weeks ago, one of our modern-day Australian prophets, Kerry-Ann Kennelly, said that with the election, if the Labor Party is elected, she said, it will be the end of the world as we know it. Lucky we avoided that. But hang on. Hang on. William Booth was actually an optimist. William Booth was actually came from a school of theology that's called post-millennial. He believed that the kingdom had come and the world was getting better. He believed that the kingdom of God was actually changing the world. And the Salvation Army was in partnership with God to change the world. And one day, the world would live in peace and harmony, and Jesus Christ would come again and reign over a peaceful world for 1,000 years. He didn't actually believe in the rapture the same way we kind of did in the 70s. Traditional Salvation Army theology is optimistic. It's positive. And actually, William Booth was right. The world is getting better. And if you go home and get on the interweb and you look up, is the world getting better? You'll find an article, I think it's from Forbes magazine, which lists the ways that the world is getting better. That by every measure, by poverty, literacy, health, freedom, and education, the world is far better than it was 100 years ago. Poverty has plummeted. Literacy has risen rapidly. Health, freedom, all of those things, they're changing. But the reality is, I think, that we would still feel that the world is not as it should be. I think we would still feel that the world in some sense is burning, isn't it? Even as it gets better, we still face trials and tribulations. And so we pay attention to Jesus' message in this. Jesus says Christians must stand up and lift their heads amidst the burning. We must stand up and lift up our heads. Christianity has always existed in a troubled world, and it's true that sometimes it's been more troubled than others. It's also true that sometimes we've been part of the burning. The church led crusades. The church has been involved in abuse. But the flip side to that is that we've always been part of the healing as well. Hospitals were invented by the church. You can't imagine music without the music of the church. The church basically invented harmony. Imagine the arts without the church. Imagine philosophy, all greatly impacted by Christianity. Now, that doesn't mean that standing up is easy, particularly when we think about it at an individual level rather than the church as a whole. What does it mean to stand up? I mean, recently we talked about Fighting Mac. Commissioner Mackenzie, that great Salvationist chaplain in the First World War, an extraordinary figure. Now, one of the reasons he was a non-combatant is that many Salvationists felt that they shouldn't fight, that they shouldn't, as soldiers, kill people. So they stood up in a different way. And he became a revered figure for doing so. In fact, you know that I went on a bike ride recently. I've told you enough war stories about that. But I was at Ladies Fellowship this week and I was telling them that at one stage I had to ride down this mountain. We all did. It wasn't just me. And Browns Mountain it's called. And if you've ever driven from Cooma down to the coast to Bega, you go down, it's a 10-kilometre descent, winding all the way. And it was really cold, and it was a slippery road, and the surface kept changing, and it had been wet, and I was just hanging onto the brakes the whole way down. And my hands were actually locked in position on the brakes, you know, basically thinking, I hope I don't die. If I slip over here, I'll go straight under a truck for sure. But when I got to the bottom, there was Major Bryce Davies in the Salvation Army van, and he had ready a hot chocolate and a hot potato. It was one of the greatest moments of my life. that hot potato. And I had this little glimpse into how those soldiers must have felt in the war when they'd climb the top of a hill on the Kokoda track, you know, through the mud with their heavy military gear in their hobnail boots, slipping and sliding. They'd eventually get to the top and there'd be a Salvation Army officer ready to give them a cup of tea, and they'd never know how did he get there. But there he was. That's standing up, you see. It's making the world a better place. It's offering hope, I think. And to make the world a better place is a good thing to do, but that's not even the end of it. We stand up and we lift our heads and we live a life worthy of our Saviour to show him to the world, to show the world our trust in him, to show that our hope is in him. Christianity is not just about morality. It's not just about purity. And sometimes we've forgotten that. So Margaret stood up today and she became a soldier, senior soldier in our Corps. And you, lots of you would know, lots of you have done the same thing, that to become a senior soldier, you make certain promises about your lifestyle. You promise that you won't drink and you won't smoke and you won't gamble, all those things. But those purity things, those lifestyle things, are only part of the issue. They're only part of the story, aren't they? To be a Salvation soldier means much more than that. It means to live as a person of hope. It means to live as a loving, generous, kind person. You see, when we stand up for Jesus, it's not just about what we won't do. We actually bear witness to our hope that Jesus himself will one day set the world right. We believe in a countercultural gospel that challenges the world. We believe in a gospel that calls the world out of itself. We believe in a gospel that challenges the idea that wealth or fame or career are the things that matters most. We believe in a gospel that challenges Australian values. For those of you who were junior soldiers when you were children, you would know that very awkward moment when at primary school the teacher gave you a book of raffle tickets and said, everybody in the class has to sell raffle tickets. And I took my raffle tickets home to Mum and I said, we have to sell raffle tickets. And she said, you'll have to take them back and tell the teacher that we do not gamble because we are Salvationists. So I took my raffle tickets back and I went to Mrs. McCready and I said, you need to take these back. We don't gamble, we are Salvationists. She said, they're only raffle tickets. I said, nonetheless, something like that. It was an awkward moment, to be honest, because the next year they'd bring out another lot that you had to sell and you had to have the same talk with another teacher. In later years when the Salvation Army relaxed its... No, we didn't relax our stance on that, but some generous parents would just buy the book of raffle tickets, you know, which is a great thing to do for their children. At the end of this bike ride, we had a kind of celebration dinner, and this bike ride that I went on, and the commissioner was there, and a colonel, and a few other people from the Salvation Army, and they actually had alcohol. Now, Salvation Army didn't pay for it, but people were allowed to buy alcohol and have alcoholic drinks with their meal. I've never been in a room with a commissioner where people were drinking alcohol. I was shocked. I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. We would say about alcohol, for instance, no, we don't drink it. We would also say, no, you're not going to hell if you do. There will be people in heaven who drink alcohol, right? We know that. We know that. But what Australia needs is a body of people to stand up and say, you can live a fulfilled life without alcohol and drunkenness. It is entirely possible. We are the living proof of that. That as a community, you can live your life without alcohol and drunkenness. That's a stand-up thing. It's not just a my purity thing, my promise before God. The Salvation Army was right all along about tobacco. We would believe that gambling, and we're right, that gambling is an insidious, culturally accepted practice that destroys families and destroys lives. And we say no to that. And it's not because we think we're morally superior, but we'd want to say there's more to life than these things, much more to life than these things. That we want to stand up and we want to be people who create hope, who create joy, who see beauty, who seek truth, who love generously, who make the world a better place, particularly for the broken. Stand up is to be role models and guides and encouragers to the world, to everybody we meet. Now, I've told you about my rules of preaching. I only have three. And one of the rules of preaching is that you should never be the hero of your own stories. You can tell stories about yourself, but you have to be the butt of the joke or an observer, right? And I'm not saying this because I'm the hero of this story, because I'm not. But on Thursday, I was in the office on Thursday afternoon, and it was about 1:45. I had somewhere that we were meant to be, and there was a boy knocking on the door, a young boy, and he'd been persistent, and one of the caseworkers for Money Cares had seen him and said, look, he's not going away, you need to go and see him. So I went out to see this boy, and I said, what's the problem? And he said, I rang up the sale helpline, and they said I could come here and you'd be open till 4:00. And I said, well, actually, the sale workers have all gone, we close at 12:30. And I was looking at him, he was young, he looked a bit like Jake, actually. He was kind of scrawny, curly hair. And I said, sorry, they're all gone, he started to cry. And I thought, you know, I can do better than this. So I thought, you know, if Jake came to somebody for help, I'd want someone to be generous and go out of their way to help him. So I said, it's all right, mate, it's all right. So we can sort this out, we can sort this out. So I took him inside, and I don't normally do the stuff you have to log on to the computer, and all right, so it just took me a while to get it done. I said, can I give you a packet of chips while you're waiting? We've got 200 packets of chips left over from the Red Shield appeal. Here, take 3 or 4. You can have an apple and a bottle of water as well. So I sorted him out, and I gave him a card, you know, his FBOS card, and said, you know, come back and see us on Monday. See what we can do. The reason I did that, though, was that, like, I wanted him to believe that there was hope. Like, I wanted him to believe it was okay. You know, he was, as it turns out, he was 19 going on 20. And he had been living with his aunt, but she'd kicked him out, and he was staying with some other friends, and it was all just a mess. I wanted him to believe that there was hope. That's what it means, I think, to be a Christian, to stand up, is to offer people hope, to lift up your head, to help them lift their heads. And I know that's a micro thing, right? That's on a really tiny scale, one interaction with one person. And I know Jesus was talking about historical events, but the principle is the same. When these troubled times begin, says Jesus, and they've begun and not stopped, when these troubled times begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads. The world needs Christian people to stand up and bear witness to hope. And we should be hopeful and positive. That is our heritage. That is our calling. I don't quite agree that Israel Folau and what's happened with him, if you followed this in the news, it'd be impossible to miss it. I don't really believe that he has he's an example or a symptom of Christian persecution. I think what he's an example of is that Christianity and our culture are out of step. That most people don't get Christianity and they don't accept it. I don't think Israel Folau has copped an enormous loss himself, but I don't think it's about Christians being persecuted. I mean, the Red Shield appeal, we had hundreds of people who wanted to give us money, hundreds of people who wanted to collect for us. And it'd be pretty hard if you're someone from Parramatta to make a case that we've been persecuted. You know, I was reading that a history book compiled, as it happens, by Elaine Godkin. And 1884, Captain Dean, one day to be Commissioner Dean, preaching a fiery sermon on hell in Parramatta. And the people standing around didn't like the cut of his jib, so they grabbed him and wrestled him, and they were going to throw him in the river. So there's a bit of a tussle, and eventually he escaped. No one has ever wanted to wrestle me over a sermon that I've preached. I just want you to know that. At least no indication that I've seen. Of course, and there was that story of Cadet Thompson, who in Parramatta, who was set upon and beaten up and eventually died of his injuries. Perpetrators apologised and there was no charges. So I don't think you and I face that kind of persecution for being a Salvationist. And I don't think you and I face persecution for being a Christian. But as Christians, I think we are out of step, as we should be, with our culture, where our culture is out of step with us. And our call in these troubled times is to stand up, to lift our heads and to stand up. We should be the most positive, hopeful people at the lunch table at work, the most positive, helpful people in the cafe, the most positive, hopeful people in the classroom. We believe in life, in goodness. We believe in redemption. We believe in a God who loves the world, a God who is saving the world. We believe in a God who is setting the world right. Yes, one life at a time. And yes, it is slow work. But it is stand up, look up work nonetheless. Jesus' call to his disciples has not changed. Stand up and lift up your head. We're not defeated or dismayed. We're needed and necessary. The world is needing us. Christ is leading us. Child of God, even when the world burns, stand up and lift up your head. Live as those redeemed for eternity. Jesus wants us to. I want us to listen to a song, and it's a song with that idea of standing up, of offering all that we are to Jesus. And here's a moment to respond to him. What's the circumstance in your life? What's going on for you in your world, in your community, where Jesus is saying to you, stand up, lift up your head, be a person of hope in this situation, whatever it is. Let's respond in our hearts as we listen to this song.